Thank you.
All right, boy.
Yes, sir. Come on, Bobby.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Ambassador Harriman, Senator Kennedy, your next governor, Frank O'Connor, your very distinguished comptroller, Arthur Levitt, Mayor Frank Sedita of this great city of Buffalo, your most able and talented state chairman, John Burns, and the distinguished chairman of this convention, Assemblyman Percy Sutton, members of the, that is, Democratic members of the New York delegation to the Congress of the United States, and members of the New York legislature. First of all, may I express my thanks to each and every one of you for this very generous and warm welcome. I just said to my friend, Senator Kennedy, that we're saving all of those signs that says, "Welcome to Buffalo, Humphrey," and on the other side, we're putting "Welcome to Minnesota, Kennedy," for next week. This is what we call a cultural exchange program, and it does a great deal to build understanding and friendship. Your distinguished senator, Senator Robert Kennedy, will be the main speaker at one of our largest civic gatherings in Minnesota a week from this coming Saturday. We call it Turkey Day out there, but I want the senator to know that it's really Democratic Day, and those turkeys that he sees running down the street next week, those are just Republicans escaping the Democratic avalanche. But I hope that Senator Kennedy can bring to my state a spirit of unity and understanding, just as this great convention is bringing to the Democratic Party in the state of New York. A new spirit of unity and understanding and commitment on to victory. It's good to be here. It's good to be in a state that had the good judgment in 1964 to give President Lyndon Johnson a majority of over 1.5 million votes. That's good judgment. It's good to be in Erie County, where you gave them 200,000 majority. It's good to be in a state that where every county saw the light and voted for the Democratic ticket in 1964. And good to be in a state that had the good judgment to send to the United States Senate one of its most effective spokesmen and one of its most articulate leaders, Robert Kennedy. And if my arithmetic is right, 27 hard-hitting, hard-working, progressive Democratic congressmen. That's a mighty fine record. I come to New York somewhat overawed by the fantastic political history of this, the Empire State. But I come to you with good democratic credentials. I'm the son of a democratic father who led the fight in the state of South Dakota in 1928 for Alfred Smith for President of the United States. I cast my first vote for Franklin Delano Roosevelt in 1932 and cast four of them for him and would have cast five if he'd have needed them. I'm an Al Smith, Franklin Roosevelt, Harry S. Truman, Adlai Stevenson, John F. Kennedy, Lyndon B. Johnson, Democrat. Now, you may have other labels for your kind of Democrats, but I'll tell you one thing I've found out, that if you want to have progressive leadership in this country, the odds are 100 to 1 that you'll find it in the Democratic Party. So, in the spirit of this great state, and in the memorable words of a great song, happy days are here again. I can feel it and I can smell it. Victory, victory is in the air. Victory this November. Victory in New York State for your governor and your state ticket, and victory throughout the nation for President Lyndon Johnson's Great Society program and the men that support it. Now I'd like to have just a few moments of silent meditation and vocal reference to the opposition party. One ought to take a moment out of respect for those that have passed on, or for those that are close to it. Politically speaking, I mean. Our opposition party has many troubles. Time does not permit me the listing of those manifold difficulties. It will just never, never understand either America or the Democratic Party. It can't understand our party because the Democratic Party is just too lively, too active, wants to be where the action is, and is too modern for them. For the old Republican Tories, the Democratic Party is a mysterious contraption that usually seems to them to be moving in 1,000 directions. Now imagine how confusing that must be for a Republican that knows only 3 positions and directions: standing still, spinning counterclockwise, or moving backwards. In this instance, it's what they don't know that hurts them. Because all of this movement in the Democratic Party, and you have plenty of it here, is caused by the internal combustion of creative ferment, of new ideas, of vigorous people committed to the proposition that change and social progress are not only to be desired, but they are the necessities, the inevitable necessities of the 20th century. But I'm here today to talk serious business with you. This could be a moment of laughter and levity, but I do believe that the politics of the people is the most serious business that confronts a free nation. The challenge to the Democratic Party of New York is clear and compelling. You know it, I know it, and the nation knows it. The nation wonders why it is that a state that gives huge majorities to a Democratic president, that sends distinguished representatives to Congress that are Democrats, that can elect a majority of the assembly, the nation wants to know, why don't you elect a Democratic governor? And I think they're going to get the answer this year. Now, the challenge is to see to it that this, the Empire State, once again regains the role of national leadership which it rightfully has held in the past, and that it does so by moving forward to meet the challenges of tomorrow, while at the same time restoring those invaluable human values of the past. Your state, New York, is richly blessed, more so than many nations. It is endowed with an abundance of material resources, magnificent land, forests, water, but far more important, it is endowed with invaluable human resources. New York, throughout its history, has held its position of leadership because of its enterprise, because of its talented and imaginative people, the builders of industry, of railroads and canals, and the immigrants lifting themselves upward in the heart of the city, the founders of religious, educational, and cultural institutions that are the envy of the world. Yes, New York has held its position of leadership because of its gifted political leaders, too. And now again, in this year of 1966, the times call for enterprise, for talent, for imagination, and above all, for progressive, and I underscore the word, progressive political leadership, and you have it today on this platform. The way is open for New York to become a principal partner in the great society, the initiator, the innovator, the trailblazer for the rest of the nation. New York State can become the showcase, yes, the great governmental, political, private showcase in our country. The political scientists have a term these days that they use to define what they call the new concepts of government. They call it creative federalism. What it really means is dynamic, responsive, responsible government based on effective, timely cooperation between all levels of government. It means better state and local government. It means, yes, generous federal aid where it is needed, and effective local administration where it is required. It means programs, policies, and projects locally inspired, locally developed, locally administered, but with a broad design that includes state and regional development backed and supported by generous federal assistance and resources. That's the kind of dynamic government that this party is talking about and offers to the people of New York and the people of this nation. It means modernizing your government, strengthening the economy at every level, and doing it in terms of modern day needs and future requirements. Ladies and gentlemen, Democrats old and young, this is the challenge facing this party. And unless the Democratic Party bestirs itself, unless this party rises to that challenge to make government responsible and responsive, to make it progressive and meaningful, to serve the people, to give tangible results, unless it does so, it cannot win. If it does so, it will inevitably win. There's a great history in this state. It's given this nation great leadership, as I've said. You've been a laboratory here for social experimentation. You've dared to try not only new concepts of government, but more importantly, new ideas for better living. But my fellow Americans, let's face it, things have changed. The flood tide of change has overwhelmed many of the political and social institutions of this state and others, designed for another day. State constitutions, state laws, even state offices are oftentimes totally out of step with the requirements of the modern age. Revolutions in science and technology have been joined by a revolution in rising expectations amongst our own people. And every public office holder, or anyone that seeks to be a public office holder, needs to know that there is a human revolution underway. People want to have their own way of life. People want self-identity. People want a sense of self-respect and human dignity. And it is the responsibility of a political party such as ours to help provide that opportunity. The tensions and the pressures in our urban centers that we all know so well are symptoms of what I speak. Poverty. Poverty that was hidden in the hills and the rural areas a half century ago, hidden away from reporters and even politicians, has now accumulated and concentrated in our cities. Racial prejudice, long endured in shame and pain, now stands exposed in its ugliness before us. But poverty is not just the problem of the poor. It is the cancer, the malignancy of America. The slum is not merely the problem of the cities. It is the rot of a nation. Transportation and traffic congestion are no longer just the worry of the mayor or the police department, the city fathers, but it is the costly clot, yes, the dangerous clot in the arteries of our national economy. Pollution of water and air, only a few years ago a subject of academic discussion, is now a threat to the health and the welfare of an entire people. These and many other problems are the tragic inheritance of failure and delay by public authority and private enterprise. The truth is that our entire system of democratic government and free enterprise are challenged as never before. The times call for boldness. The times call for experimentation. Yes, for daring at every level of government and in the private economy. And let me be manifestly clear. The answer to all of our ills is not just more help from Washington, but it also includes self-help. We need a renaissance, a rebirth of state government, a revitalization of local government, and private initiative. You see, good government does not mean a strong, powerful federal government aiding, comforting, propping up weak, obsolete, ineffective state and local governments. Modern American government requires a partnership of equals, a partnership of efforts, with each partner fulfilling his own duties and responsibilities, and each party equipped to carry his own share of the load. And that's what Frank O'Connor wants New York State to be able to do. Yes, Mr. O'Connor knows that federal aid to be effective must be managed and used and applied in a political and social environment that is conducive to action and results, and not to procrastination. And that's why a Democratic administration in Albany, New York, is needed to work with a Democratic administration in Washington, D.C. And you people here in New York have a great opportunity. You have the chance for a new constitution which can provide the framework needed to cope with these problems of tomorrow. You have the chance through reapportionment for full and fair representation at long last. But what is more, and what is most important, is you have the chance for political leadership ready and able to go to work in friendly partnership with local, state, and federal government. And that's what it takes to get a nation on the move. In Washington, you're represented by liberal, progressive congressmen. And by the way, we can use a few more of such Democrats in the New York State delegation. Including Bill Levitt, right up around this area. And as I've told you from this platform time and again, you are represented by a vigorous, effective United States Senator, the honored son of a great family, the devoted and trusted brother of our late beloved President, a gifted and talented public servant, Senator Robert Kennedy. Now that's your Washington team. But now the people of New York have a chance for new leadership in Albany. Leadership by a man who has devoted his entire life to the service of the people of New York. By a gentleman who possesses the qualities of integrity and vision, of compassion and action, so much needed to make the revolution of rising expectations a positive human achievement here in your state. And I mean none other than leadership by Frank O'Connor, the next governor of the state of New York. Make no mistake about it, the people of New York, before this campaign is over, will recognize in Frank O'Connor what the people of New York City have already seen for many years. They'll see that Frank O'Connor is a constructive liberal, that he is a practical progressive, that he is a compassionate man who wants to help those who need help, and that he is an honest man whose whole record in public life demonstrates that he means what he says. He keeps his word. I think by now you have caught the idea. I like Frank O'Connor, and I'm sure the people of New York like him too. But let me pause for a moment for a little scriptural admonition. The Bible says, if the trumpet give an uncertain sound, who shall prepare himself to the battle? My fellow Democrats, you write that down on your coat sleeve, in your notebook, on the back of your hand. Put it someplace so that every day you can read it. Because the answer to victory is, let there be no uncertain sound. Let the call be clear and loud. And my fellow Democrats, prepare yourself for the political battle of your lives, because you're going to have one. And I come here as a friend, a fellow citizen, a fellow Democrat, a representative of your administration in Washington, your vice president. I come here to ask you that you make this campaign a unified, all-out effort to restore Democratic leadership in Albany, New York. Unity doesn't mean that you have to have unanimity. You don't have to agree on everything. If we did, we'd all have the same clothes, the same wife. Unity leaves room for differences, but it imposes a responsibility for the achievement of common objectives. We're not asking the Democratic Party to march in goose step in unanimity. I'm asking the Democratic Party to act like Democrats, to get out and speak up, talk up, and fight to win in November. I'm asking you to campaign in unity and in high hopes, not only for the next governor of this state, but for the entire Democratic ticket when you have settled on that ticket, and go to work. I want to tell you right now that if you'll spend as much time working as you do discussing what ought to have been done, the Republicans won't have a chance in this state. And I'm asking you once again to return to Washington. These good Democratic congressmen who have helped so much to mold these historic programs of the past 5 years. And I ask you to win new seats, too, in Congress. Let us begin, was the challenge of President John F. Kennedy. Let us continue, was the charge to a grief-stricken nation by President Lyndon Johnson. And my fellow Americans, we did begin. We did get this country moving forward out of the doldrums of Republican recession. And we have continued. We have not failed in our responsibility. We've broken through with new ideas. We've broken through with new laws and programs. We've broken through with a depth of commitment that could not have been imagined a few short years ago. And may I say to my liberal friends, we've passed more liberal legislation in the last 5 years than in the preceding 50. It's a mighty good record. Yes, we've made an all-out commitment to the education of our children. And in the past 3 years, we've more than doubled our federal investments in education. Yes, we've broken down old barriers of racial discrimination and injustice, and landmark legislation has been adopted. The Civil Rights Act of 1964, the Voting Rights Act of 1965, and with your help, the Civil Rights Act of 1966. And we've set to work to solve the enormous problems of growing and sprawling metropolitan areas. We've created a new federal department of housing and urban development. We have passed and provided rent supplements for our low-income families. And we are now mobilizing our resources, our best minds, the most advanced techniques to the task of finding integrated, systematic approaches and solutions to the encrusted problems of the metropolis, the great metropolitan area. We're not running away from responsibility. We're seizing it. We welcome the opportunity to face up to responsibility. Yes, and we're working towards the eradication of a disease as old as mankind, poverty, that takes so high a toll of those afflicted by it and those who must carry its burden. Yes, and we've transformed a cold and heartless immigration policy into one that is just and humane and progressive. Yes, we're providing hospital and nursing home and medical care under Social Security for our fathers and our mothers. And we've resolved to defeat illness and disease, which brings tragic loss to our economy and unbelievable pain to our loved ones. In the past 3 years, this administration has more than doubled its investments in health care, in health protection. And we have helped create an economy of growth and justice and opportunity, an economy of more jobs, higher salaries and wages, greater investment and profit, an economy able to sustain our responsibilities at home, and an economy able to sustain our commitments for peace and security abroad. We can do both, we Americans. It adds up to this. You ask for action, and you've had action, 5 years of action, of growth, of change, and social progress. And I ask this great convention, using this platform to remind this nation, don't let the 90th Congress become in our time what the 80th Congress was in its time. Let's not let anything interrupt this forward progress that this nation has made. And that means a Democratic Congress elected in 1966 and Democratic administrations across this land and the state houses and courthouses of America. We promised you many things, and we have been true to the faith. We began with John Kennedy. We've continued with Lyndon Johnson. We have done well, but we are a people, we are a party never satisfied with yesterday's goals. We're restless in our search for the fulfillment of America's promise. And America's promise is simple and direct: liberty and justice for all. That is our promise. And now we must march on. And we have the means, the resources. There is no doubt about it. Ours is the richest and the most powerful nation on the face of this earth. There is only one question that needs to be answered: the question of our will, of our determination to wage our peaceful revolution for the many, even though the few may be satisfied today. I come to this great assembly to tell you that we can make the promise of equal opportunity for all, with liberty and justice for all, a reality in our lifetime. And indeed, we must do so, and we need to start it right here in New York State. Life in our cities can be more than steaming asphalt and crowded tenements. It can be more than filthy air and polluted water, more than clogged highways and congested streets, more than bursting classrooms and underpaid and too few teachers, more than violence and hopelessness and discrimination and hate and despair. And it can be a lot more than temporary material satisfaction. The way lies open to Americans all to build a society, America the Beautiful, in which human values above all count the most. The way lies open to cities, alive with industry and economic progress, filled with green and open space, to transportation that is safe and comfortable and rapid, to neighborhoods once more filled with neighbors, to schools and universities that truly care about the future of our children, to rural areas and towns and cities and suburbs where people, good people, because they are citizens, because they are people, can live together in harmony and cooperation, no matter what their age, the color of their skin, their religion, or their last name. This is what New York means to America, and this is what America means to the world. This is what Lincoln meant when he said that America is the last best hope on earth, and let's maintain that high hope for ourselves and for others. I leave you today with a historic reference to a great president, a great New Yorker, a great governor of this state, and a great humanitarian, and a great Democrat, always a Democrat. Democrat who fought out his problems and his wishes and will within his party. Some 21 years ago, a great American president, a former governor of New York, a man who, as I said, was true to his party, his conscience and his country, sat at his desk in Warm Springs, Georgia, seeking to recover some of the health and vitality that he so richly deserved. And he sat at that desk to write an address he was never to deliver, because he was taken from us. And it appears as if the pen literally fell from his hand as he was writing that address, which was to be given at a Jefferson Day dinner to Democrats in the spring of 1945. The great and beloved Franklin Roosevelt wrote then, on the unfinished page, the words that serve as our challenge and our charge today. Listen to these prophetic words. Let them sear into your soul and your mind and your heart. Make them your creed as citizens and partisans and as Americans. Franklin Roosevelt, even at the moment of his death, called upon Americans to understand the only limit to our realization of tomorrow will be our doubts of today. Let us move forward with strong and active faith. My fellow Americans, if a president who was surely a casualty of conflict and overwork, if he could have that boundless faith in America, If he could call upon us to erase our doubts, if he could call upon us to have active and strong faith in those difficult hours of war, why should we not have that same faith in this hour of our power and our wealth and our responsibility? So let us then, as Democrats, as Americans, as men and women who believe in liberalism and social progress, let us move forward with President Lyndon Johnson, move forward with Frank O'Connor with a strong and an active faith to bring the victory that we justly deserve from the record that we have established in public service. Thank you.